welcome to a brand new episode of Radio Free Nintendo, courtesy of NintendoReport.com. I'm Carl Castaneda, recording in Mike Sklenz's apartment without Mike Sklenz.
Creepy.
I busted the door down and stole his internet connection with my bare hands.
That's pretty incredible.
Joining me on this show is the pride of Colorado, Jonathan Metz.
Hi there.
He's from Alabama.
Yeah, but wherever he is, that's where he's the pride of.
Aww.
And the secret shame of Oregon, Evan Birchfield.
One of these days, you got to learn how to pronounce my state. It's Oregon.
I have a feeling that Oregon has a lot of secret shames that are far, far worse than Evan Birchfield.
Okay, that's both. That's not a compliment. That's an insult. So you gotta watch your mouth.
Well, guys, what's new, folks? This is the first time we haven't had Mike Sklenz on the podcast in a while, and let's explain why. Because I like to embarrass him.
Okay.
Mike gave me a call tonight as I was doing laundry, telling me that, you know, he wouldn't be able to record tonight because he has to go to a party and get drunk. And, so instead I broke into his apartment and now I'm recording here.
Okay,
and I'm going to steal something. I just haven't decided what yet.
So he sure is living that college life, isn't he?
Yeah, with his fancy computer chip keys that you don't even need to turn them when you put them in the door.
Yeah, well, no, my point is that he's been out of college for a year. Yeah.
He's been out of college for 2 years.
For two whole years, he's had his degree.
Yeah.
So. Anyways.
He doesn't live on campus. He lives off campus.
Sure, but he might as well. He works on campus.
Well, I mean, he has a job, if that's what you're saying.
Whatever. Enough about Mike. No one cares. I mean, we miss him, I guess, but...
Sure. Well, let's go ahead and move on into new business. And, Evan, what's my new business? Let's start with me.
Oh, okay.
Let's start with you, Carl.
Let's start with me. Playing stuff. I got three games to talk about. First up, I've been playing Fire Emblem for a review, and the review should be up by the time you hear it, the review will be up, and I know I say that a lot, and a lot of times it turns out to be a lie because I'm lazy, but this time, it's true, baby. All right? Because I've played well into the game. I'm ready to review it, and I gotta say, if you haven't already played Path of Radiance on the GameCube, do yourself a favor and get that instead, because it's probably way cheaper, and it's a better game.
Wow.
Well, I mean, not in the sense...
on the first-party Wii software.
Well, not in the sense that, like, you know, I mean, the graphics are the same.
Mm-hmm.
There's no widescreen support, but, I mean, I don't know. It's just the story's a lot better. The way that the game is paced is a lot better. And I think that, like, this game, I think, is too hard. And I know that a lot of people say that, and it's like, oh, whatever, you're just on hardcore, you know, you just suck at strategy games. And that might be true, but even on easy, I was having a lot of trouble.
And you've like, actually played the previous game.
Yeah, I've actually played and finished the original Fire Emblem, but the Fire Emblem that's on the GameCube on normal with, not, I mean, it was hard, but it wasn't that hard.
Mm-hmm. Carl, you just need to admit that Nintendo is too hardcore for you.
Yeah, they need to start catering to the babies like me.
Yeah, they need to release more of those Wii Fit strategy games for you, for your types.
They need to release Fire Emblem, the version where you just like shake the remote to win.
Shake the remote. Yeah,
shake
exactly.
The remote, and then it's like, oh, well, good strategy, you win.
We'll call it Rayman Raving Fire Emblem.
Sure. I do appreciate that you can play the game NES style, so you can just put the Wiimote on its side and then play like that. I really like games that you can play like that with, because it's just real. You can kick back. You don't have to like have your hand up in the air and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not the only one who feels that. Then, like, I hate having to, even when I play Super Mario Galaxy, if I want to be collecting those bits, those star bits, my
you
kind of
just
want to
like. Kind of kick back and you want to play like that, but you can't because you constantly have to have your hand, you know, in a good position to be picked up by the sensor bar.
Sure. In order to lay down,
I have a fairly high coffee table, and if I just rest the remote on my thigh, just kind of a natural kind of just a sitting down in your arms or in your lap kind of a pose.
Yeah.
Then the remote sensor is like kind of right on the edge of that table, getting blocked out because I have the sensor bar at the bottom.
Yeah,
under the TV. So I have to, like, consciously hold it up in the air
to play. Yeah, I don't know. That's one of the inherent flaws of the Wii. Hopefully, I know they originally didn't want to have a sensor bar. Hopefully, by the Wii successor won't need one.
Well, if they a part of the, I don't know if it's necessarily a flaw because it's so necessary for most of these games to have direct pointing. It's really a game design issue. Luckily, some of the best games like Galaxy are it's somewhat optional. You have to make menu choices and things like that, but you can spin and do all kinds of things without pointing at the TV. So if you don't want to collect those star bits, for me, what I've done is I've had to come up with a system, and it sounds weird, but so I can lie down on my bed while I'm playing. What I do is I hold the nunchuck behind my head and prop up my head, and then I have the cord stretched across my body so that I can then have my right hand holding the Wii remote pointing at the TV. It looks funky because my hands are as far apart as possible, but I am playing the game, and I've done that with Metroid and I've done that with Mario.
And that's why I like to play Fire Emblem NES style.
Yeah.
But as far as the game goes, it's not really not bad. It's definitely far from bad. It's a quality game, and if you have played Path of Radiance and you want an expansion to that, then this is a good choice. Because it's more of the same and harder, and you can transfer your characters from that game over to this one. So, in that regard, if you're like a hardcore Path of Radiance player, then this is definitely for you. Just if you haven't played that already, then it's hard to recommend.
I'm sure Nintendo's really looking forward to selling this to a subset of the massive audience that the previous game had.
Oh, for sure, yeah, seriously. It's like, let's make a direct sequel to one of the biggest flops on the GameCube.
Yeah.
Let's make a game that will appeal to the fewest people possible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that aside, I haven't given it a score yet, but I'm leaning towards like a 7.5 to an 8, somewhere in that range. So you'll see it up very soon.
Okay. What other games? You had more.
I had more, but none of my other games are Nintendo-related, but hey, screw it. I've been playing Call of Duty 4 on the 360.
Uh-huh.
So awesome.
Really?
Yeah, it shits all over Halo. it's so much fun.
But yet Halo gets all the 10s.
I know, it's screwed up, dude. If you ask me, what I don't like about Call of Duty 4 is that there's no local co-op, like you can't play split-screen co-op, and that kind of bugs me.
I like the way that's just completely been erased from vernacular of gamers anymore. It's like no gamer anymore can play co-op with a friend in his house because it's all online now. Pretty soon the next Guitar Hero won't have co-op.
Yeah, that I hope not. But
No, it won't happen. It's an exaggeration. But
right. But like, no, it kind of bugged me, but we played a lot of multiplayer, and it was a lot of fun. Like, it's just a really pure first-person shooter, real easy to pick up. I'm by no means an expert at the genre, but I picked it up really, really easily. Before I knew it, I was getting kills all over the place. It was really nice. It's just a really well-made, easy to pick up first-person shooter. So it gets a big thumbs up for me if you have it on if you have a 360 or PS3.
I saw it running on a PC that this guy had the demo. Just that he had downloaded the demo and he showed it to me on this unbelievable, like, $4,000 laptop that he has.
Yeah.
It looks like it would transform into a robot, this laptop. And, he boots up Call of Duty 4 demo, and my eyes almost popped out of my head. The graphics were absolutely unbelievable, like, the best graphics I've ever seen.
Dude, they're ridiculous.
That's a function of his computer also.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, my friend has, like, a really nice high-def TV. It was looking real, real good.
Speaking of awesome graphics, have you guys seen those screenshots of Crysis?
That look. You mean the game Crysis that's been out for like a week now?
Oh, has that been out?
Yeah.
For a week now.
It just came out. Yeah.
I don't keep up. That looks so incredible.
Yeah, it's actually going to look better in a year. Here's why. They actually incorporated things into the game that take advantage of hardware that hasn't been released on the market yet. So as time goes on, the game will actually look better.
Wow, if you are consistently updating. This is why I don't play PC games, because I will never have exactly what I want.
Ever. Also because you have a Mac.
Well, you have to rub it in, so.
I have a Mac too, dude. It's all good.
I'm not ashamed of my purchase. I'm just saying that even if I did buy a PC, I would want it to be as definitive as possible for as long as possible. I don't want to be the guy who has to buy a new part every 3 months. I hate that.
Well, I mean,
I can contribute to this conversation, actually. Oh. I just bought a brand new graphics card for my PC, and it came in today, and I installed it. And the great story about this graphics card is that I bought it for $100, but there's a $50 rebate.
Sweet.
And it's a DirectX 9 card. It's kind of like close to top of the line from last year, so it's still really good, but the prices have dropped so dramatically that I can actually afford it.
Is it ATI or NVIDIA?
It's NVIDIA, GeForce 7600.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and for $50, yeah.
Oh, totally, dude, yeah.
And
you'll definitely be able to play Half-Life 2 no problem now.
Right, exactly. I had kind of stopped playing the Orange Box because I had ordered this like 3 weeks ago and it was on back order, so I had to wait a long time. But
yeah,
I booted up Half-Life 2 today and also Portal and played both of them for like 2 minutes each, and they are dramatically better. And not just in Portal, the difference in the graphical quality is not even that high because Portal just doesn't have good graphics. I mean, there's just nothing splashy about them whatsoever.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it runs so much smoother now because before. I would start to like recursively go through portals, you know, like falling through one and then out the other, and it would just drag down to like 2 frames per second. It was really hard to play, actually.
Right.
But installing it was really interesting because it's a full size PCI Express graphics card, and I have a slim case PC, which I didn't think about that at the time that I ordered it. Mm-hmm. So it will fit in the computer. But I have to leave one side of the case off because it hangs out. It's about twice as wide as the rest of the PC.
That's so
and
funny.
Also, the little metal frame that goes around where all those cards pop out the back, you know, where all the connections are.
Yeah, uh-huh.
There's a metal frame that sort of goes around the top and the bottom of those.
Mm-hmm.
The side of it was kind of covering up the DVI. Connector
on DVI
the graphics
port.
Card. And I could still use VGA, and that's what I did originally when I first plugged it in because I just wanted to check and make sure it worked. But my monitor has DVI, and I have a cable from my old computer. So I really wanted to use DVI, and I'm like, what can I do here to uncover that connector so I can plug it in and use the best connection I have? So I got a pair of pliers and like grabbed the metal right there and bent it back and forth until it fatigued, and I just broke it off. And so now I can actually use the DVI on it. So
nice.
I modded the hell out of my PC case today, and I feel so hardcore. And then I played some more Wii.
Well, Johnny, I should tell you with what's the VRAM on the video card? 256.
It's got 256, yeah. And I have 2 gigs of system.
You should be easily able to run Call of Duty 4 on that.
Yeah, I know. I thought about it. That may be one of the games that I just wait on until I get a 360.
Sure.
Sometime next year, whenever they decide.
It'll look at least as good as it does on the 360.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm starting to think about that. Like, I did an Amazon wish list today, and I put Supreme Commander on there, which is a year-old game, but still, it's a resource beast.
Yeah.
And I was a big Total Annihilation fan back when I was a kid, so I really want to try this. This is kind of sad, but the main reason that I'm just really happy I have a good graphics card now is that I'll be ready for StarCraft 2 next year.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
Evan and I go way back with StarCraft.
Oh gosh.
Blizzard.
Yeah. I've got Blizzard mostly bad memories though, not good ones.
And you know, Blizzard always makes sure that their games can run on almost any type of hardware, so you should be fine.
Yeah. That's true, but it'll look really nice.
You know? Yeah, sure. They're not using sprites this time around.
It looks nice, but that it runs well.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. Yeah. But the last game that I'm going to talk about, and I know this is something that Evan has played as well, is Assassin's Creed, also on 360, also available for PS3.
Uh-huh.
And I think that Evan and I feel very differently on it.
Well, you've got more experience. My opinion's not really all that valid yet. But.
Yeah, I've played a good 4 hours of the game, so I'm not necessarily far in the game, but I've played enough to get a good feel of how I feel about it. It's I would describe it as like a game that steals from a lot of games.
Well,
it's like because it feels like it's part Zelda, part Prince of Persia, part Metal Gear Solid, and kind of jumbles together and is only successful at emulating those games like 3/4 of the time.
Well, but see, it's not really stealing from Prince of Persia when you're the development studio that made it and you are calling
that's fair.
Inspired by Prince of Persia, which is what
sure.
they did.
Sure, okay, fine. Inspired by Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
Yeah, inspired by Prince of Persia and, you know, stealing from these other three series.
Yeah.
but it's something where, like, it's a game that it's hard to explain because a lot of people are very divided on how they feel about it. And personally, for my taste, something that the game does that just right off the bat really pissed me off is that you can't skip the cutscenes.
You can't do that in Super Mario Galaxy either, and let me tell you, the second time you play through it, that pisses me off. All five of them, I know, but...
Yeah, that pisses me off then, too, but...
You're playing the entire game for the second time, Evan?
Well, because that... We'll talk about it on My New Business.
Right. Oh, but, you know, it's like you can't skip the cutscenes, and that wouldn't be such a big deal if they weren't popping up 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many cutscenes, and the weird thing about it is that they make the cutscenes interactive, like you can move the camera around, and that's cool, I guess, but it doesn't really give you an excuse to like put them everywhere. Like it's not interactive, it's not even cineractive, it's just kind of lame.
Cineractive? Fuck you.
Well, my experience with the game has been that I really think that the Prince of Persia elements are strong, but they're not all that's there. What's really there is kind of this idea of a world. And I don't know how many times you've heard me go on and on about how much I love location in games, but there's a reason Shadow of the Colossus is one of my favorite games of all time. And honestly, I got a bit of a Shadow of the Colossus feel.
There is some Shadow of the Colossus in there.
Assassin's Creed. And to me...
And you know why? You know why it reminds you of Shadow of the Colossus? Because you travel on a horse and do nothing for hours.
Okay. Oh. I'm going to love this game so much. I'm going to come back to you after I've played about five more hours of it. I'm seriously going to say best game of the year. To me, that is like the... it's not doing nothing that's awesome. It's creating a world that is so filled that you have the ability to do nothing.
I will say that the game is extremely pretty.
Well, yeah, but it's not just pretty. The greatest thing about Shadow of the Colossus is when you're wandering around, it's like this world wasn't created for you. This world is in Zelda, the world is created for you. There's nothing useless in a Zelda world. And no matter how much they want to make their world seem like Shadow of the Colossus because it's huger in Twilight Princess, it's a lot bigger than the previous Hyrule's. It doesn't matter because every time they have a giant open space, they plan a battle there. They have such a much more literal view of how to create a world. Everything has that meaning, which means as soon as you see something, you know how it's going to be used. You can never look at something...
Evan, I have a beef with what you said a minute ago.
What?
You said there's nothing useless in the Zelda world. How about rupees, pose, insects?
Well, see, here's
heart,
I guess,
pieces, for that matter. Honestly, if we're going to be really frank.
No, I'm going to agree with you, Johnny. I'm totally agreeing. This is my problem, is that Zelda sets up this idea of everything has a goal. Instead of in Shadow of the Colossus, nothing has a goal. But when Zelda...
I totally know what you mean.
I know.
I wish, though, that I feel the same way about Shadow of the Colossus. To me, it's such a beautiful world that it's not boring to ride through it because there's so much to look at. And I think if you can push that to an even greater level and make it even more interesting and beautiful to look at, that, for a lot of people, I think just the aesthetics of it are worth going through it and spending time in it. But I do wish there was a little more interactivity.
Well, I think
not necessarily that it's all set pieces and, oh God, here's happens to be a block puzzle.
Yeah.
That you can solve.
Yeah,
but
I think that Shadow...
I would like it to be a little more interactive.
I think Assassin's Creed is kind of achieving that in a lot of ways, in that these giant cities that are filled with people and that do affect your progress. You have to move through them in either a slow way, or you can just rush through them. And if you shove into them, you might fall over. It might slow you down.
The thing about that is that you haven't played the game long enough to know that the things that you've encountered early on in the game are repeated ad nauseum.
Well,
so we talk about Nintendo games here?
Okay, go for
it. Let me just end Assassin's Creed by saying that it's a very, very ambitious game, and some people will really, really like it, and other people will say that it's only average, but in either case, it's still worth a rental, just to see if you are one of those people.
Okay,
I'm done.
I would love to play it, but again, I don't have the hardware. So I'll start with, very quickly, Guitar Hero 3. I beat Medium last week, and I've started on Hard, and I'm doing better than I thought, and I still really like the game. I think it's great. Okay, number two, Mega Man ZX Advent. Mm-hmm. I'm probably two-thirds of the way through the game. I'm getting close to review time on it, and at first I didn't like it very much. It starts out like most Mega Man games, where it feels like you can't make any progress. You try a couple different levels, but they're too hard and you don't have the equipment that you need to get through them, and it just feels like you're running into a wall. And then all of a sudden you get lucky, or you figure out a pattern on a boss that you so that you can beat him without a special weapon, and suddenly it sets off this chain reaction and you just start blazing through the game really, really fast. And it's pretty much like that, although the difference is, because of the structure of the game, you don't start off with 8 different choices of levels. You start off with 1.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a lot of trouble with that level, it just gets very, very frustrating, because you can't even go try anything else. You just have to keep at it over and over until you figure it out. And it's hard, you know. The really cool thing about it, I think by far the defining characteristic, and I guess this is carried over from ZX, although I think maybe Advent takes it a little farther from what I've read about the last game, ZX, is that instead of the Mega Man tradition where you beat a boss and you get 1 power from him, in this game you actually transform into the boss and you get this Ooh. Whole suite of powers. So now you have a new basic attack, a new sub-weapon, a new special attack, maybe new jumping abilities, and you can break open different kinds of blocks, and then some of the guys even have, like, extra special abilities that go on the touchscreen. Like, there's a guy with a radar or an item locator, and there's a guy with a buster edit, which means you can, like, redraw the path of his buster so that when you shoot it, it goes in this pattern that you drew.
That's really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a lot more exciting when you beat a stage and you get a new power, because you're actually getting, like, 5 powers. Mm-hmm. And it feels a lot more satisfying than the old Mega Man games, because a lot of those powers that you used to get in Mega Man games, you would turn it on and shoot it at a dude and kill him, and then you turn it back off. It's like a thing that you use in very specialized situations, whereas most of the transformations that you get in Advent, you can play that way normally if you want to, and it's a valid alternate way to play rather than use the normal form. And so you can kind of spice it up and get a little more variety out of the gameplay.
Very
so,
cool.
Yeah, I do like it. The story is still really terrible, but I talked about that last week. And
yeah.
I feel like they're kind of missing the boat with the story, because this is a game that I'm pretty sure is bought mainly by older players who have played the Mega Man series for a long time. Not to diss kids, because I know kids are good at games, but I don't think most kids have the patience for this kind of a game.
No.
And there's no anime that goes with the Mega Man ZX franchise. There's no marketing connection that would lead you to think that this is probably made for kids. In fact, I would say everything about it says it's not made for kids. It's more like Contra 4. You know, it's clearly an adult game. It's made for people who've been playing for a long time, and yet the story is like a shitty Saturday morning cartoon from the 80s. It's like
awesome.
The Pokemon cartoon. It's unbearable to listen, and it's fully voice acted, and I wish it wasn't.
That's how I feel about Battalion Wars 2 voice acting. Yeah.
Well, no one's ever liked Battalion Wars voice acting. It's always been terrible.
That's true.
So.
I've never heard
but
it, and I probably won't ever.
It's like, I can't even describe it, but have you gotten to that part in Mega Man ZX Advent that I was thinking about last week that was like all reminiscent of Mega Man 2?
No. I'd like to get to that before I write the review, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah.
So the other thing I've been playing is Super Mario Galaxy, and I'm sure you guys have. Well, Carl, you have not, have you?
I just literally picked up the game on the way to Mike's place.
Okay, so you haven't even booted it yet.
Not even, no.
Okay, well, I'm going to spoil everything for you right now.
Awesome.
you can't spoil a Mario game.
I know, you really can't. I mean, I could tell you what all the power-ups are, but I think most of them are in the manual anyway.
Yeah, there's like 2 that aren't.
One power-up that I would definitely not spoil for you.
Yeah, next up, Johnny's going to spoil the passion for me.
The passion, okay. Well, Carl, you're Jewish, so I might actually be spoiling it for you.
Oh, snap.
You might not be overly familiar with that story. I mean, it's a possibility.
Touche, sir. Touche.
Anyway, I love Galaxy. I'm kind of obsessed with it. Like, the other day, I got up and started playing it, and like 2 hours later realized, oh, I haven't eaten breakfast yet. It's been that kind of a situation where I just lose all track of time when I'm playing it. And it has this weird burnout vibe where it seems like you unlock things faster than you can complete them.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Oh, yeah.
And so it always feels like there are 10 things that you could go do. And you didn't really get that in the previous Mario games.
Yeah.
At times it's almost overwhelming. You're like, I don't even know what I want to go do next.
Yeah.
But it's pretty magical, and at first I wasn't sure if I would like the do you remember back when they showed it at E3 and everybody's like talking about, well, I hope it's not just all these little tiny planets that you're jumping between.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, those are my favorite levels.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought that I would really be hungry for the giant levels that are more like Mario 64 levels. And what I'm finding is that those are
the
less
worst.
Satisfying because you have to run. You have to do so much just running back and forth across them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the gravity ones are just a little more fun. And the cool thing is when they put you on this smaller planet, it's more mysterious because you can only see like maybe 25% of the surface at a time. And then you run all the way around it. And even then, you're not sure that you've seen everything because you may need to change directions a little bit and run back around it in another direction to actually catch that one side of it where the pipe is that you couldn't see before.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like it really brings a new kind of exploration into the game. Even though the environments are smaller and broken up, to me, it's more fun to run around and try to find the little nooks and crannies on them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's also a much more linear experience in most of those small planet levels. And that's what I like, is that sometimes you might have a branching path here or there, but because it is linear, it really harkens back to more of the two-dimensional Mario games.
It is, yes, I agree. Yeah, and one thing that I found very interesting is that, you know, we've seen screenshots and videos and stuff for months of these places that appear to be 2D levels in the game, and usually mm-hmm. they're just tiny little pieces of other levels. They're just like you go down a pipe, you play a little 2D thing, and then you come back out of the pipe. They're not like entire levels like that.
Right.
But what's cool about it, and well, what I was originally worried was that they'd be kind of hard to get through because of the 3D controls, and you saw this a little bit in Sunshine, where you have essentially 2D areas, but since you can still move in and out of the depth of the screen, mm-hmm. sometimes you'll do wall jumps and you'll end up jumping off into the camera and die and mm-hmm. things like that. And what Galaxy does is when you get into a 2D area, it just turns off that axis of movement, and so you can only move left and right, up and down.
See, I really like that. That sounds like a really good design choice.
It really is. It's a mix of New Super Mario Brothers, as well as Mario 64, and it with this, the way that they integrate that, and that it's like there's a million different places that they go with the gameplay. I'm shocked with the game, honestly.
Yeah, Shane Bettenhausen said something about it on One Up Yours that I had not thought about it in this way before, but I think he's totally right. He said the great thing about Mario is that you'll have played it for 10 or 15 hours, and then all of a sudden you'll realize I'm doing something that I haven't done before in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so few games that can keep up that level of variety for that long. And it's so different, and I'm really afraid of the clones that this game is going to produce, because N64 was really plagued by that kind of a game that was trying to imitate Mario 64 and failed miserably.
Yeah.
And what I'm afraid is that, well, and you've seen this for the past 10 years in 3D platformers, that basically 3D platforming became a non-genre, because the platforming itself would be 10% of the game, and the rest of it would be you doing a Mario Kart style race and popping balloons and blah blah blah, and they put you in all these different activities that don't have anything to do with the main gameplay, and they're all really half baked. And the weird thing about Galaxy is that it puts you in just as many crazy activities that have very little to do with the core gameplay, and yet they're all done so well that you like them.
Mm-hmm.
And the games that imitate this are going to fail so miserably.
Yeah,
I can already tell.
Something that I want to say about the platforming genre is that we've definitely seen in the last 10 years that games that have succeeded as platformers haven't been pure platformers. They've mixed in stuff from other genres. Case in point, Ratchet and Clank has really become more of a shooter than it is a platformer. At least
I think that's why Ratchet and Clank sucks. Honestly, I've only played a couple, maybe an hour of one of the games, but I felt I was completely turned off by it. I was like,
"Well, it's not
a good platformer. It's not a good shooter, and I'm collecting shit out my ass."
But the graphics
I think
are
that you
so
should try.
Good.
Johnny, I think that if you get the chance to try Ratchet and Clank: Future Tools of Destruction, you should, because I think it's a quality game. But I can you can tell just by playing through like the first couple levels that I know exactly what this game is going to be. Like, it's pretty much the game kind of designs itself. Well, like, it's a very predictable game.
I
really did like
Ratchet & Clank the first time I played it when it was called Jet Force Gemini on the
Oh, shit. Snap. All right, well, but another game that also is another case of, like, mixing genre is Jak. Because while Jak didn't go in the shooter direction, it went in kind of like the GTA direction. Where it became more about, like, you can steal cars and also jump. Wasn't like, it's kind of like
that was right. That was Jak 2, the one that everyone hates.
Yeah, well, Jak 2 is a very shitty game. And then Jak 3 was more of a return to form, more pure platform, but it was still very much based in this, you know, gigantic overworld, kind of run around, do what you want kind of thing. But yeah, Jak 2, I wasn't a big fan.
Okay, well, I'm done with new business, so Evan, why don't you go and maybe we can make this entire show new business.
Yeah, we're at like a half hour already, holy crap.
Well, there's but a lot going
been,
on.
It's been fun, and we're playing a lot of games, it's that time of the year.
Yeah, yeah, it's new stuff that people want to hear about.
Got games to play.
Yeah, it exactly. Really doesn't even matter anymore. So, other than Assassin's Creed and a little bit of Guitar Hero 3, which I don't have on the Wii yet, but as soon as I do, I will own everybody out there except for Steven Rodriguez. I honestly think I could even beat Johnny, but I don't know.
Oh,
you probably can. I'm not that great at it.
Oh, really? Like, I'm.
Yeah, you could. If it was Karaoke Revolution, you're fucked. That's not on the Wii yet, so.
I so regret not actually having done karaoke when we were at E3 last year, 2 years ago, because I figured, you know, they'll be next year. I'll actually be 21.
Well, Evan, you're getting Rock Band, right?
My friends are getting Rock Band. I will be playing it, and you can bet that if there's a way for me to, I've already mentioned before, YouTube videos out the wazoo if I can.
Dude, I challenge you. Obi and my band challenges your band.
Okay, well,
to a band off.
Well,
Obi,
okay.
I choose you.
Bing! Yeah,
I'm looking forward
Dude,
to it.
Dude, and there's been just an aside that I won't delve into too much, but there has been a gigantic infight in the band over what to name it.
Oh God!
Holy crap! Seriously, and we finally decided on something, but
you guys are
it took
a
so
virtual
long.
Band. You aren't even a real band. How?
I know.
Why
I
does
know.
It matter?
Obi wanted to call us Ducks Fly Together, as a reference to the Mighty Ducks.
Uh-huh, but here's the problem with that. Now that you've announced it on the podcast, everybody's
Well, that's not
it.
The name we're using, so it's fine.
Oh, okay.
And then our drummer, Larry, wanted to go with the Flying V, which is also a Mighty Ducks reference.
What are you guys obsessed with the Mighty Ducks?
I'm not. It's them. It's like, dude, this is our childhood. You don't understand. I'm like, dude, I saw the movies as a kid too. I still don't care.
Yeah.
I was more of a kid than they were, exactly. We did end up going with the Mighty Ducks reference, but it's still, like, it sounds good enough where it's still halfway passable as a band name.
Well, you know,
you should name it Fly to the Navigator.
I like that, actually.
What I hate is every time I try to talk with people about completely off topic, how John Williams' musical scores sound exactly like Aaron Copland, and how he's totally ripping off Aaron Copland, I'll play Aaron Copland music for him, for this person, whoever it is, and they'll always say, oh, that's the song from the Mighty Ducks. Be like, is that all that you know Aaron Copland for? The Fanfare for the Common Man. It's from the freaking Mighty Ducks. I try to play this music for so many people, and all they ever say is, oh yeah, that's from the Mighty Ducks.
That's really funny, Evan, because if you went 10 years before that, they'd say, oh, that's from the beef commercials.
So,
well, there you
anyways,
go.
Back
to... I think that one's called Hoedown.
Back to my business.
Yeah.
Super Mario Galaxy, I beat it on Sunday. I got 120.
Nice.
120 stars. 120? 120.
Wow. Are you satisfied with your reward for doing so?
With my I'm not going to spoil the reward. No one has to turn off the podcast as though it's a spoiler at all. But yeah, no, I'm satisfied. Let's just say that the reward in quotation marks, I'm making quotations, you can't see them. The reward is interesting, fun. I don't think I can do 120 more. But right, the last...
Hey, Evan.
Huh?
Well, maybe this is what you were going to say, but... Do you feel like once you got down to 10 or 20 stars left, it started to become a chore?
No, it didn't become a chore. What it did happen was, and you guys may not have experienced this yet if you're only about 60 stars, this isn't a spoiler though, is that the comets that show up that change the rules for the levels, those comets are randomly assigned, and as soon as you only have comet levels left, It's not as though all the comets are unlocked. You have to jump from dome to dome to finish all these comet levels. So if I have like 4 comet levels in the kitchen dome that I need to do, I'll do one of them, and then the next comet will show up in another dome, so I have to go all the way over there. That was the most annoying thing about it, was just having to go. And the comet levels are just cut and paste. They are just old levels redone, where you have to either play it with only having, never getting hit, or having fast enemies, or things like that. So some of them were a little repetitive. Some of them were a true challenge, and I liked that. But the best of the stars are the ones that were really hard bonus levels that still felt like I was doing something new. There's one particular, I'll just say the purple coin level on the toy galaxy. That's hardcore. I liked it a lot. Took me about 40 lives to finish. So
holy crap.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's 40 lives, that would take you like 5 minutes to accumulate.
Yeah. unless you turn your system off. And then you're screwed.
No, you're not screwed, because every time I turn the game on, Peach gives me 5 1-ups.
Yeah, so you
and
have...
And then within 5 minutes, I've got 15 more.
But see, in order, if you like turned on the system, and you wanted to go and play one of those really hard levels, then as soon as you get over there, as soon as you turn on the system, you're only going to have 10. You have to go to a different level in order to get those lives. So I don't like that. I think that's dumb. I've been accumulating awesome, but the thing is, they're handing out. They are really handing those lives out. The simplest solution, only give extra lives if you get 100 star bits rather than just 50. You know how many lives I would have? I would have 20 right now. And that would have been if you had allowed me to save them. I would have 20, and that was it. So
did you ever get I keep wondering, do you get a 1-up if you get 100 coins? But I've never gotten 100
coins. I have gotten 100 coins, and yes, you do.
Yeah, coins seem kind of... It seems like they probably could have gotten rid of coins in this game.
If they were going to do what they did with star bits. But hey, the thing with coins, though, is that you get a 1-up if you get 50 of them, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, the other thing I wanted to ask is, does the last stage and the final boss change once you get 120 stars?
No. It's the same.
I'm a little disappointed in that, because... Yeah. The last stage is good, but the last boss, I feel kind of the way I did about Mario Sunshine. I just don't really think it's all that interesting of a final boss.
Okay, battle. Mario Sunshine's is so... I watched a person play Mario Sunshine just a few days ago when I was showing him Galaxy. He was finishing up Sunshine. He's 8 years behind the rest of the world. And I was surprised. I was like, did I like this when I was playing this? This is terrible. This is awful. Like, and what about the terrible voice acting? You know what Mario Sunshine is, guys? Mario Sunshine is a parody of Mario. The whole ending scene where Bowser is telling Bowser Jr. about who his real mother is, and the terrible voice acting, and this supposed, you know, it's a vacation, but then there's this whole familial squabble between the Koopas. Gah, it was so stupid. And Super Mario Galaxy takes its plot so seriously. I am shocked at how it does this. And the ending is so dramatic.
It is. It's really kind of epic. The ending is quite... I was very satisfied with the ending, just not the final boss. And I'll just say, I'm not going to spoil the final boss, but there's not much to spoil. And I'm going to say that I know you and I have talked about this. I know TYP and I have talked about it, the similarities between Donkey Kong Jungle Beat and Galaxy, because they were developed by the same studio team.
Uh-huh.
And one of the cool things is like the boss that shoots the green melons, and you have to spin and hit them back at him, and you do a little volleyball kind of a thing, a tennis volley with the green melon. That is straight out of Jungle Beat. Although, of course, this time it's in 3D. It's a little more difficult.
Yeah.
But one of the negative things that the game shares with Jungle Beat is that it reuses bosses.
Yeah.
And this pisses me off more than just about anything else in gaming, is when you reuse bosses.
Metroid Prime Hunters
was really bad about it. Jungle Beat was not as bad. Jungle Beat had like 3 or 4 different bosses that it would just cycle through. And the problem in Jungle Beat is that they didn't even really get harder as you went. They were just pretty much the exact same thing over. In Mario, they do it less, and they do get harder the second and third times.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you use basically the same pattern. You just don't have as many safe spots and things like that. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys came up with like 100 levels
Yeah.
Essentially, if you break down the galaxies into all the different paths that you have to take, they made like 100 levels for this game, and they couldn't come up with more than 7 or 8 bosses.
Mm-hmm. The thing, though, is that some of those bosses...
I don't care for that.
Some of those bosses are really awesome, though. Some of them are
yeah,
really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just that they
like
aren't
to see
enough.
More of them. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And I think that there's...
I don't think it's out of laziness that they reuse the bosses. I think they actually think, oh, this will be cool if we, like, revive this theme and have them do it over again.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not more interesting the second time. It's less interesting because you basically already know what to do.
But, you know, they did that in other Mario games, too. I don't know if we can necessarily just say that that's a galaxy thing. That's happened before where certain bosses would kind of return as though they are a... and even it happens in Zelda, where it's kind of like this running character. It's a reused character who's part of the plot, and the plot is that he keeps coming back.
Yeah, and it's not a part of the plot in Mario Galaxy.
It's not.
And I can't think of when it happened in Zelda. It has happened in Mario. You go back to Super Mario Brothers, it's the same boss 8 times.
Yeah.
With very slight variation.
In Zelda,
but
I'm thinking
come
of
on,
the...
that was 20 years ago.
In Zelda, I'm thinking of the orc that rides the warthog that you fight 8 times. And you do it in like 3 different ways. Hmm. The one who goes through the whole game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you fight him. You fight him like maybe 5 times total, 4 times, but each time he's pretty much the same. So
sure.
Yeah. So I think that I don't know if maybe it is just laziness. But I think they only reuse maybe 3 of the bosses in Galaxy, and they reuse each of them once, and that's not terrible. At the end, when you're doing all the comet stuff, you really are finding that you're playing the same levels just with different rules, and that is a little. A little annoying that, like, pretty much the last 20 stars for you are going to be a repetition, but it is still challenging. I've never been quite so challenged as playing these last 20 stars in a Mario game. Maybe because I've never gotten to the last 20 stars of any Mario game, and this game actually let me get there. So maybe it's easier in the long run. I don't know. The game's first 100 stars, though, are just magnificent, beautiful.
Pretty spectacular.
Amazing. This game is...
To be fair, it's not as bad as like the blue coins in Sunshine.
Oh no!
It's not that tedious.
No,
you know.
No, purple coins are actually to me a replacement for the 100 coin challenge in Mario 64 and in Sunshine. The idea that you get instead of having 100 random coins around the level, it's 100 specific coins. And I like the idea of the purple coin challenge, is where it's 100 specific coins and you have to get them all. I like that a lot better, and some of them are hella tough, others are a little bit tedious just because of they're the flat levels. Like, this game has a great diversity between the flat levels that are Mario 64 style and the spread out galaxies, and I prefer those spread out galaxies almost bar none, and they get inventive. They get so crazy too. So and some of the last few levels are just like, people accuse Nintendo of not being cinematic, and just because Nintendo doesn't use cinema scenes in a Mario game towards the end, you know, it's not like they're trying to give those plot out, because they're not very plot driven. These last few levels are just downright amazingly cinematic. Things will happen that you'll be like, I can't believe that Nintendo is ever accused of being so flat and so dry, because they're not. They are visually and aurally beautiful.
All right.
Yeah. So.
Well, Evan, I hate to cut you off because we're having such a great conversation here. But
so why don't we take a break first and then do Listener Pin.
You got one more week to send in an email with that stupid less than Jake quote.
No, the password this week is "Oops, I crapped my pants."
Nah, well, all right, whatever. One of those two. But we do have some listener mail here from our good old buddy Saturn, who sent me a gigantic freaking essay email, and
I think he actually sent two emails about the same thing.
No, he did, and he sent another email like, "Oh, and I forgot this second essay.
I forgot these other 5 paragraphs."
Yeah, so. So yeah, but I think that his final paragraph from the first email sums up his point. which is saying, I really think if you're going to agree that review scores are bad, why use them and screw up the industry more? He's referring to the review discussion that Evan and I had on our supposedly Super Mario Galaxy focused episode.
It was sort of a prank. It was more of a late April Fool's Day joke.
Sure. He goes on to say, it doesn't matter that you've been doing things like this already because you can always change it just as easily. It's like having murdered 20 people and then saying that you have to keep on murdering people because you've done it 20 times already, rather than turning yourself in and paying the families that you messed up or something like that. Okay, there are a lot of things I need to correct about this. Okay, review scores aren't as bad as murder.
Okay, no. Best analogy ever.
And B, you don't have to pay families when you murder them.
I mean, not always.
Unless you're OJ, I don't think you have to do that.
Yeah, I think most families get absolutely nothing from
the deaths of their relatives.
I don't think that's how it goes down.
They really don't get anything out of that, do they?
But you're not getting anything from the murderer. Most of the time, the murderer doesn't have anything to get anyway.
That's why he's a murderer.
Yeah, that's why he killed your dad.
Exactly. So anyway, to get away from this very depressing notion, let's actually answer the question. And Johnny, since you're our reviews editor, why don't you explain?
Yeah, I guess
why we keep on murdering people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, personally, I get kind of a weird thrill out of it that I cannot explain. I argued from the start that we should not murder people. But at the time, I was not the chief murderer in our game.
Wendy was just so adamant about murdering people.
It wasn't Wendy. Wendy wasn't even thought of back then. I think he was on the site, but he was like a nobody.
Okay. He was murdering small time.
He was a nobody along with me. Nah, we were just doing graffiti back then. But, you know, so at the time, the drug lords decided that they would indeed murder people, and it went on for years that way. And when I became the chief of the mob, I thought, I could put a stop to this, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some problems with doing that, and I'm going to abandon the silly metaphor at this point. But the chief reason is that our site runs on a database, so... all the reviews have to be the same format. The only way for us to change the format of the review to that extent is to create a new type of article. And then it becomes a problem combining those two types of articles in the same list and the same search results, because they're two different breeds. And the other problem is there's kind of an aesthetic problem, because you have people coming to the site who aren't familiar with this changeover that we made. And they're like, why do some reviews have scores and others don't? The other problem is that we have impressions, hands-on impressions on our site, which are like reviews but without scores. And obviously there are other differences between impressions and reviews. But if we took the scores out of our reviews to the casual reader who's just found our site from a search engine, it's not clear what the difference is between impressions and reviews, because they look the same. Sure. And all of this starts to become a real problem of explaining this to people, of explaining it to our staff, of why we're doing it and what they need to do differently now. And quite honestly, I think we have one of the better scoring systems there is. If I could do anything about our score system, I would say we should probably drop all the categories and just do an overall score.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we can't do that for the same reasons that we can't get rid of all the scores. But other than having too many scores, I think that the way we do scores is pretty responsible. And I don't like it as much as I would prefer to just not have scores at all, but it's better than the way a lot of other sites do it. In other words, you're not going to come to our site and see that a certain game got a 7.2 and wonder, why is this better than this other game that got a 6.7? Because on our site, those are the same number. It's just a 7. Mm-hmm. And, I probably would even do away with half scores. In fact, if you look at my reviews, you'll find that I rarely use half-point scores at all. Very rarely. Because I'm usually not that torn. I would go with gut reactions on scores. And so I rarely have like a half point gut reaction. So, but yeah, I think as long as our reviewers continue to do pretty well with scores and go on intuition and not try to hold themselves consistent with other things, because that's a nightmare. That's a logistical nightmare. As long as we kind of hold to that principle, then it's not too bad. It could be a lot worse. I'll put it that way.
So here's another thing that you haven't hit on either, which is that you talked about how if we did get rid of scores, then we'd have to do a whole new type of article. And it seems to me as though those answers aren't complete, because it presupposes that we want reviews to still function the way that they have been in the past, that they are a way to compare games and understand which ones are worth purchasing and which ones are not.
No. But what I'm saying is that if you're looking at the list of reviews, some of them have scores, some of them don't. That's confusing to people. I'm not saying it's not confusing to Saturn, but it's confusing to other people who come to the site very rarely.
Sure. I guess what my point is that the reason it is confusing to them is because they might be looking at reviews with a different intent than we would have if we got rid of scores. If we got rid of scores, we would be saying to, I think, at least this is my opinion, this is why we wouldn't have agreement even across the staff on how to do this, is if we're getting rid of scores, we are essentially saying that comparing games in a systematic numerical way is not worth it. And that even comparing my review versus another review is not worth it, because it's like someone saying to me, it's like these end of the year top 10 lists of games and movies that just make no sense. That everybody's like, why is this movie ranked 2 and the other one's ranked 3 when they're both among the 10 best of the year? Do you have complaints about some of them? Do you think that some of them, it just doesn't jive? So comparing,
Evan, I would
things,
say if people are using our reviews as a comparison system, then they're misusing our reviews, because it's not designed for that purpose, and it works extremely poorly for that purpose, because not only are we reviewing things across 2 or 3 different platforms over the years, but many, many different game types and consoles versus handhelds, and we have 20, 25 staff members at any given time writing reviews. So you can't even, even if you compare one of my reviews to another of my reviews, that score is still not meant to be a comparison. That's not what I'm using them for. I'm not trying to say that this game is better than all the other games that scored lower than it. The only thing that I consider the review to be good, the score to be good for, and it's not very good for this, but this is the only purpose it can serve, is to give a summary of my critique of the game.
Yeah. I've mentioned this before, that other people within the gaming industry, especially the professionals, since we are not professionals, the professionals out there that are getting paid to do this have found that their readership drops when they make changes to review scoring, that the ability to compare games numerically is something that the average game reader wants. The person who gets these magazines, has subscriptions to magazines, and reads these sites. The people who read blogs, you know, Chris Kohler puts ratings on his blog's reviews. Sometimes he'll post a blog without giving a score, because he's actually just talking about the game. And usually that's when he's getting more in-depth into the game and talking about what actually makes it good. And those are the posts I prefer. And then same thing with places like Joystick, where they'll do these long essays of people talking about a game. There's no sort of definitive answer on it. They just are talking about it. Then they'll go and they'll compile all the reviews together and say, hey, look, this reviewer gave it a 90, this reviewer gave it a 95, this one gave it a 70. And that's when I'm like, well, you know, what's the point of a blog if the whole point, you know, the whole thing, one of the things you can do is get away from that, is get away from the numbers altogether and just say, I am posting these thoughts and sending them to you. No requirements for format.
The idea that you need scores for your readers to be satisfied is bullshit, and here's why.
Okay.
Case in point, look at somebody like Ben Crenshaw, a.k.a. Yahtzee, over at The Escapist.
Well,
his reviews are extremely popular. They're also comedy-based, I understand.
Yeah,
but
I don't think that's a
fair
comparison. But
they don't include scores, and they are highly rated, highly enjoyed, and very well taken.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a really fair comparison, though, because although he does get in-depth with the games very often, he's not actually, he's giving his experience in such a visual comic way that certain necessary points get completely passed over.
And yeah, that's and how you've and that's how you've just that, made that
those,
go ahead, Johnny.
Those Yahtzee reviews are they're not really serious critiques. They're more like broken pixels where he's it's usually he's just kind of bitching about a game and it's funny. It's not meant to be a serious critique of the game nor a serious recommendation of the game, and that's why people let it get by without having a score and nobody complains about that. Also, it's a completely different format. It's a video.
Sure, but he's more in line with the Penny Arcade style where they do actively talk about games. They just are talking about them and saying, hey, I played 10 hours of this game and here's what I think at this point. Or, hey, I played this game and I beat it and here's my thoughts and we've funneled this into a comic. So a comic can function as a review of a game in a certain sense. I've read certain comics at Penny Arcade and I feel like, hey, they summed up my feelings on that game and they've done a better job of it than most of the reviews out there. And they didn't
and they
have
did
to get
it in 20 words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that... I think it's possible for Yahtzee to be treated as a review, not in that he's either telling you, yes, buy this or don't buy this. He's saying, he's giving you information about what makes the game a game and what am I thinking about as I'm playing it? What makes this a work of art, honestly? What makes this engaging in, on a personal level, on an individual level?
Okay, so in fair that enough, sense, but I'm going to cut you off before you start talking about art.
I'm just saying, I think that his stuff is reviews too, just the same way that reviews ought to be more like Yahtzee. I agree with Carl in a certain sense.
Well, you've convinced me. One thing you said, Evan, no, you really have. You mentioned that we're not professionals, and I just wanted to say we have just had a staff member who got a job at IGN as associate editor of IGN Insider or something like that, Mike Thompson. He just moved out to San Francisco this week.
Big ol' congrats to Mike Thompson.
That's awesome. So just a fair note to everyone out there in listener land, if you're looking for a way to get into professional games journalism, joining a site like NWR is a good stepping stone to do that. And
Mike Thompson, RFN alum, I gotta say.
Oh yeah, what, he was on here like once?
He was on one episode, and that was the episode that got him the job.
Was
Are
it
you
real?
Serious?
No, I doubt it.
That was like months ago.
But it would have been really cool if it was.
If you go to your local Walmart or game retailer or whatever and look at the PC section, although I know it will hurt you to do so, go to the PC section and look for Puzzle Quest for PC, and you'll see a big fat quote right on the front of the box. And it's credited to Nintendo World Report, but that comes from my review of the DS version.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it will be used in the upcoming Wii version, which comes out at the end of November. I'm hoping so, but
that
it
doesn't
say anything.
Sweet.
It is pretty cool. I've been quoted in magazine ads before, but I think this is the first game box that I've been quoted on. And so I just wanted to throw that out there. Keep an eye out for it. You might see
Johnny...
my words in your local store.
Johnny is a corporate shill confirmed.
Well,
no, I'm not a corporate shill. That was an honest review and an honest critique of that game.
Johnny
I happen
doesn't,
to like that game a lot. And then after I wrote it, the marketing people for the PC version saw my. They were like Googling for it probably, and they saw my review.
Yeah,
and they
I know.
Said, hey, can we use this particular quote on the box? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't care.
Yeah, but what I think is most interesting, though, is that you actually have a substantive quote on a game, whereas the majority of the quotes that get onto games are from previews, and they are usually hype and drivel, and they have nothing to add.
Right, and sure. and the other time that this has happened to me was for Cubivore on GameCube, and that also was from a review because I had done an import review of the Japanese version, and then it took them several months to bring it to America, and when they did, they ended up, and that time they didn't even ask me. That they don't really have to, but that time they put a quote from me, something about, it looks like a Picasso video game, or I don't know, there was something about the art style that they used in a magazine ad back then, but it's been years since I've been quoted, as far as I know. So anyway, it was pretty cool, and I just wanted to share that.
And anyway. I didn't, not to disparage NWR by saying we're not professionals. It's just the official distinction, which is that we don't get paid for
we don't
what we
get
do,
paid,
and that gives us a little bit more freedom.
Wait,
that gives
wait,
us
guys, hold on a second.
Yeah,
you don't get paid.
No.
Ooh, wow! You should talk to Wendy about that because I've been getting paid for a while now.
Okay, so okay, Carl. As interesting as I think that this whole side thought is, haven't we made But having you made that joke before, I think you've made this before. I think you have to go back and look at, like, episode, like, I don't know, 45.
I've made that joke in episode 9, motherfucker.
All right. Okay. That's good.
All right, guys. I think it's time to close things down.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a real healthy episode. We know we've only done new business and listener mail. And so segment 1 is the entire show this week.
Yeah.
But we broke it into 2 parts.
Yeah.
Well, guys, you can send all of your thoughts on the games we discussed on this episode to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can also leave a review for us at iTunes, where you can also subscribe if you haven't already. Get that fancy AAC fee where you get the nice little pictures. In any case, we've gone way over the deep end here, so see you next week.
Yeah, so okay. Long.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.